Even though the science is clear, there is still a lot of public opposition to climate action. Can deep canvassing campaigns help to convince people of the urgency of ending fossil fuels?
Hello, and welcome to Climate Organizing Shorts, where we're having short but inspiring conversations with climate organizers to help give you ideas for how you can build momentum for change in your community.
Climate Organizing Shorts is a collaboration between Pullback Podcast and the Climate Justice Organizing Hub. I'm Kyla Hewson, and I'm here with Kristen Pugh.
On today's episode, I spoke with Montana Burgess, the executive director of Neighbors United, which is an organization that's based in Interior, BC, that led the first complete deep canvassing program on climate anywhere in the world. They're a big deal.
Listeners are going to get a really cool idea of how deep canvassing can be used to really engage with a community on a level that hasn't been explored in quite this way before. And I loved this conversation, and I think listeners are going to get a lot from it too. Let's go.
Your organization has gotten a lot of attention just for its deep engagement project, which uses deep canvassing to talk about the environment. How did the idea for that campaign start, and what was it sort of trying to accomplish?
We've been helping identify supporters and turn them out to show their support for the 100% renewable energy transition. And we'd been hoping that local governments would make commitments to transition all of their community energy to 100% renewable no later than mid-century. And we did that because it was like an accessible way to do something meaningful to address the climate crisis, but also have us take action in our own backyards rather than focusing on something bigger that we can't necessarily influence in the same way. Across our communities, we'd been, you know, going to farmers markets, having conversations with people on street corners, community events, and identifying people that wanted to see this. And then we'd help them show their support to their elected officials or decision makers in their community. And then their decision makers would inevitably support the 100% renewable transition and then start working on implementing it because their community wanted it. And we helped make that very clear. And when we started working in the community of Trail, British Columbia, it was a little bit of a different story. It's a town that has a smelter in the center of town that basically processes different metals. And Trail has a complicated history. It's a town built around mining, a town built around the smelter. And you might remember in the 80s, there was a lot of media attention on Trail because there was very high levels of lead poisoning in children and babies, which is obviously a big problem for health and a healthy community. So because of that, and because of the community's dependence on this company and this operation, it's a real frontline community in terms of impacts of polluting industry and also of the intersection of the jobs versus environment argument. And so when we started going to community events in Trail, we really quickly couldn't identify enough supporters. And we realized we needed to actually hear where people were at, what was holding them back from supporting an 100% renewable energy transition, and help them kind of weigh what was on both sides of the issue for them so they could decide if they actually truly did want that or didn't. And when we were thinking about how do we do that, I had heard a podcast, This American Life, an episode called For Your Reconsideration, where it talked about deep canvassing and what it is and what it could do. And that particular episode went over the academic kind of situation of how it was studied and shown to work. And so for me, when I heard that episode, I was just like, this is what we need to do in environmental work. It's really like, it's about taking relationships and authentic storytelling and being compassionate and listening to the next level. And that's what I loved about it. So for me, that relationship-based community organizing has always felt like what made sense to me because of the way I think and feel. So this extension, deep canvassing, this specific method you can use to engage with people, it just seemed like this is something we need to do in the climate movement and in environmental issues to figure out what's holding people back and help them move through it.
I'm wondering, for somebody that maybe hasn't heard about deep canvassing before, I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit more about what it is and also sort of what were some of the first steps that you had to take once you decided that you wanted to take this approach.
So deep canvassing is a specific method of having a conversation with a person in a community to figure out where they stand on an issue, and then to help them move through their internal conflict that may be holding them back on supporting the issue that you're working on. So it really relies on the person doing the deep canvas showing up and being able to listen and being compassionately curious and just truly wanting to know where the person's at and what they think. If you come into it wanting to change their mind and getting a specific outcome, you're not as good at it. I don't know why, but like you have to really show up and be curious. So if you're not actually curious, you're not going to be able to do it well. And so what a canvasser does is you have about a 20-minute conversation with someone, and surprise, surprise, people are generally really happy to tell you their thoughts and feelings on an issue if they're asked. So people are always like, why do they talk to you at the door? And it's like, well, because we ask them curious questions and we genuinely want to know what they think. And people don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about big issues in that way. So yeah, it's a 20-minute-ish conversation where the idea is the canvasser shares an emotional story about their experience on an issue and encourages the other person that they're canvassing to do the same through asking curious questions. And helps them really get to that bottom of why. Why do they feel that way about a certain issue? And then, you know, ask them explicitly, like, what's on both sides of this issue for you? What are some reasons you're for it? What are some reasons you're against it? Why do you think that is? And then at the end of the conversation, kind of revisits where do they stand on that issue on a 0 to 10 scale? What we've found on the door is about 1 in 3 people do change their mind when they're given the opportunity to talk through what's on their mind.
You said people were really sort of willing to talk about these issues. And what were some of the things that you heard that maybe surprised you, or things that you heard from other volunteers that surprised them?
And I think for me, the most surprising thing is the vast majority of people are really reasonable. I mean, if you go on social media,
that's good.
It's horrific out there. It feels like the world's ripping each other apart. But if you have a conversation one-on-one in person, the huge, huge majority of people are very reasonable and are curious too, what's going on in the world. And they haven't thought about some of these big questions before. They're often just really busy trying to pay their bills, trying to get their kids to school, or trying to work their jobs and make ends meet. And they haven't been given this opportunity to talk about what's on their mind and think through why they believe the things they believe. So just the openness of folks to talk about these things and have an honest conversation has been really surprising.
You said that deep canvassing works better if you start from this position where you're not trying to change somebody's mind. And I'm wondering if you could talk to me a little bit more about how you set up a conversation where I assume yourself and everybody else who is doing the deep canvassing had pretty set positions on those climate issues that you had mentioned and were probably in some sense looking to change minds. But how do you go into those conversations without that mindset?
Well, I think a reason why people love to deep canvas and a reason why I love to deep canvas is I love stories. And that's how most people learn, is through stories. And so it's an opportunity for me to tell the story about why I care about taking action on climate change now and what's at stake for me. And I get to hear other people's stories about what's going on in their life. What are the experiences they're having with natural resource extraction industries and, you know, all the layoffs they're doing and big profits the CEOs are making while people struggle. I get to hear about the struggles in their life. I get to hear about what's at stake for them, what they care about, who they care about, what they hope for. And so I think if people can come into the conversations, like I said, being really curious and just wanting to hear where people are at and what's on their mind, then you can show up in an honest and authentic way and meet people where they're at. And you can kind of go through a process together of thinking and feeling through what's on both sides of an issue and why they might actually support a different position than they think they do. The defining feature of deep canvassing is it's not transactional. It's aiming to transform a conversation about beliefs, not only with the person you're canvassing, but another outcome is the person having the conversation, the canvasser is also being transformed because you're hearing where the person's at and meeting them where they're at. And I know personally for me, I think very differently about a bunch of environmental and social issues because I better understand where people are coming from that are different than me, that aren't in my bubble. So I'm able to have a lot more compassion and able to think through, like, what does balance mean? What's a balanced approach? How would these policies affect someone who's in a different position than me? And that's been so valuable for, you know, being reasonable and practicing humanity. In a conversation, we explicitly say where we stand on the issue because we want people to know we're not trying to trick them or do anything like that. We're coming in wanting to have open and honest conversations because that's not something we do very often.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about a conversation that springs into your mind when you're talking about sort of how hearing people's perspectives help to improve the way that you think about environmental issues and coming to balance solutions.
One of the first conversations I had back when we started doing this in Trail that was really moving was with a woman who was living in a pretty unpleasant situation. It was a low-income neighborhood. She explained a little bit about her situation and how poor she was, frankly, how little money she had, and how poorly her landlord was treating her and her dogs. She just described her personal struggle, and it was so hard to hear and was not a life that I am living, and I have a lot of privilege in that. And she shared it so openly and without anger, but with just like a lot of, this is the way it is. I don't know what to do. It's very hard. We had a conversation about her personal situation and, you know, talked about how the impacts of climate change, like wildfire smoke and whatnot, is affecting each of us, and how that's just even harder in her situation without, you know, air filters and whatnot in her home. At the end of the conversation, like, she had me in tears, not on purpose, but it was just so sad, her story. But at the end, she was still like, but I think, you know, we need to do more around climate action. And like, of course, we need to do more about affordable housing and making sure people like, you know, her aren't stuck in those situations. But like, she saw the bigger picture of how these impacts were affecting her and people that had even less than her. Like, her level of compassion was very moving. So that conversation really impacted me and made me really aware that we do not give voices to low-income folks very often. They are very much left out of the conversation, and often because they don't have access to situations to share their voice, or they're so busy just trying to get by, they can't come to like a community forum to share their perspective. And their stories are so hard to hear. Like, I can't imagine it'd be comfortable for her to be that vulnerable in a big group or something like that. So yeah, that was a very transformative conversation. And then on the other kind of spectrum, one of our canvassers in our sister project in Alberta was having a conversation with an older woman on the door, Aunt Mary. They were talking about ending tax breaks to oil and gas companies in Alberta. And Mary started out in the conversation saying how, yeah, she totally supports oil and gas. And, you know, it's just who you are in Alberta. It's just who we are, is what she said. And so in the start of the conversation, that was her view. And then after, you know, sharing some of her personal struggles and actually getting into how she's seen people get laid off in the oil and gas industry, and then hearing more about actually how much money the CEOs are making in those companies while they're laying off workers and getting public tax dollars, she, by the end of the conversation, was like, actually, I'd rather that money go to like healthcare. The doctor situation here isn't great. And she talked about the people she knew working in healthcare, like in first response, and how hard it was for them. So helping people just talk through the blips they hear in news, but relating it back to like their lived experience, is so transformative. And just, again, hearing her say it's who we are as Albertans dependent on oil and gas as it is, that's such like a thing you hear. But it turns out underneath that isn't true once you start to unpack what that means for someone.
From what you've said so far, it sounds like economic anxieties came up a lot in the conversations. Are those sorts of struggles, did you find that was sort of like one of the top barriers to climate action?
The biggest barrier is around not trusting the government and the governments. And like, I'm in that club. Politicians do themselves no favors when they say one thing and do another, and it just like goes on and on. And we can't do anything about that barrier with folks. We can't help them get through that because, like, it's true and we share it, I think, all of us. But what we can do is say, you know, like, I agree. I also don't trust them. But I know that when we work together as citizens and we make a demand very clear and there's enough of us, they have to respond. Our democracy isn't broken. We still have elections, et cetera, and ways of it working with our decision makers. So bringing them back to that collective action power is really important. And that's genuinely what we're trying to do, is build power together as average people to hold decision makers accountable and get the basic things we all need. But then other barriers are, you know, they don't trust environmentalists as messengers. So some of the big environmental groups. Another barrier is the personal cost of action, where they think it's going to be very personally expensive for them. The other kind of three big ones that I kind of put in the same bucket are, they're overwhelmed by the scope of climate change, overwhelmed by the scope of the problem, and or the issue doesn't feel urgent. Like, maybe they're not personally being impacted by climate change yet. So it's hard. If you're not actually impacted, even if it's a good friend of yours that is, it's not the same as your lived experience. So helping people find their lived experience is important, and helping them understand solutions are possible, you know, showing success stories or whatever the policy we're talking about, pointing them to that and explaining like how it can make a difference. And that can also help address the overwhelming scope of climate change, where it's like, we can't do everything, but we can do this one thing. And it can make a difference. And we can do it if enough of us come together to make sure our decision makers know it's important and hold them accountable to do it.
How do you get somebody to a place where they recognize climate change as an urgent problem if it's not something that they're identifying as personally affecting them?
Yeah, and most people don't. It's where I live, even though it's so affected by forest fire smoke, like, we have so much wealth in our communities, generally, personally, like comparatively to some other parts of the world. And we're really insulated from the impacts. So in our storytelling in there, we first model our story of how we've been impacted by climate change, and then ask them curious questions to draw out their story as well. So for example, for me, I talk about how I grew up in Kamloops, which is a very dry place. There's sagebrush, it's a grassland community. Even though it was that kind of ecosystem, there was only a handful of days where it was too smoky to go play outside. And now I live in the West Kootenays, and it's actually an inland temperate rainforest. So very lush in comparison to Kamloops. And the smoke here each summer, it's like almost a month of smoke now. You know, that's not great for my mental health. But more importantly, I have a child now who's 5. And back when she was almost 3 or just turned 3, she had a cold. And one evening I was putting her to bed and her breathing was very strange. So I called 911 and I was holding her and just feeling kind of like panic. I felt like there was nothing I could do except just be loving. But I could see she was struggling to breathe. And that was very terrifying. Got her on oxygen, took her to the hospital, and it turns out that she has asthma. So whenever she gets a cold now, she becomes quite asthmatic, and it's a whole thing with puffers. But with this very, very smoky summers here, I'm also very terrified and also feeling so devastated about her not getting to have the carefree childhood I got to have, playing outside in the summer every day. So that's, for me, what's at stake. And it feels overwhelming, and it feels like there's nothing we can do about it, but I know there is, and I've seen successes of people working together to solve pollution problems, like in Trail, bringing it all the way back. Like I was saying, in the 80s, they had a real big lead pollution problem from the smelting operation, and the community came together with the industry and the government, and they solved the problem. They really reduced the amount of lead that goes out from the smelter, and there's still some, and any is not good, obviously, but it's way, 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 way less. And it's like, if we did that, then we can do it on other issues. And I think that's like where we're at with climate now. It's, we have to solve these locally and bigger to make sure the impacts aren't too bad and that we curb the worst of them that could come.
Let's say there's somebody listening to this conversation who's interested in starting a campaign like this. What would be your advice to them about deep canvassing and how to get a campaign started?
You need to figure out if you need to help people resolve their conflict and come through at the other side to support your policy, or if you just need to activate people in your community to show up and support a thing, or if you need to give people some education. There are three different things. Well, then it's time to get your team together. So figure out who are some of the folks that can help you and do this with you. 2 to 4 people willing to work on this for, you know, at least a year. It's iterative and it's a labor of love. It takes a lot of emotional effort to keep showing up because sometimes the conversations are really hard. And then I'd recommend that they visit our website and download our free Deep Canvassing for Climate Solutions playbook and toolkit, which is available at neighborsunited.org. And then we'd love folks to come and check out a deep canvas. So we do them every week online, neighborsunited.org, and go to the volunteer for deep engagement section. They can register and come to one of our trainings and learn what it's about, have some conversations, and then talk with us about how we might be able to help you launch one. It's truly been the most hopeful thing I've ever done. Like, I sleep well at night. I don't have a lot of anxiety about the future because I know I'm doing something really meaningful every day. So I'd really encourage folks to explore it. If you're feeling anxiety or not quite sure what to do, it brings me a lot of hope connecting with people in this way.
Montana is just such a delightful and insightful person. I thought it was a really fun conversation to have. And if listeners are interested in hearing more from her, we actually did a longer episode of this on Pullback, so you can check out our Deep Canvassing episode there. And if you like what Neighbors United is doing, you can support them by becoming a member today.
Or why not start a Deep Canvassing campaign in your community? If Montana inspired you and you want to know more about how to get started, you can go to the Neighbors United website and download their Deep Engagement Canvassing playbook and toolkit.
And if you do set up a campaign, let us know about it by emailing the Climate Justice Organizing Hub at contact@lehub.ca.